afternoon. It's Friday. Sunny in London, if you're inclined to notice such things. Here on Turing's Torch, we tend to focus on what's happening beneath the surface, the currents rather than the spray. It's been another week of pronouncements, of course, a constant hum of innovation, or at least, that's how it's presented. It brings to mind Alan Turing's observation, made some time ago now, that it seems probable that once the machine thinking method had started, it would not take long to outstrip our feeble powers. The challenge, as ever, is discerning which of these rapid developments are genuinely outstripping us, and which are merely outstripping common sense. This week, we're attempting to separate the signal from the noise, to look past the immediate clamor and assess what, if anything, is truly shifting. This is Turing's Torch, Artificial Intelligence Weekly, the bits that matter, minus the hype. There is a pattern to the week that matters more than any single announcement. The conversation has shifted from imagining what the technology could do to asking who keeps it working, who pays for it, and who is accountable when it does not. That shift is practical and institutional. It lands on job descriptions, on procurement paperwork, on insurance forms, and on the humble habit of pressing a red button when things fail. Take the recent hiring notices at a well-known research institute. One advert sought a program associate to translate research into finished work. The description was plain. Keep reports on schedule. Run events. Support senior staff. Turn ideas into visible outputs. In short, coordinate so projects actually land. That is not glamorous authorship. It is logistics, calendars, vendor management and follow-up. That role is crucial for influence. If you want a paper to reach a policymaker, someone has to format the findings and book the speaking slot. The day-to-day decisions about deadlines and presentation formats shape which ideas gain traction. Power moves through institutional processes as much as through journal citations. Hiring choices at the operational level affect who gets platformed and how quickly organizations respond to policy windows. There was a less pleasant detail in the advert. No salary range, no contract length, no clear working arrangement. Those omissions are not neutral. They make the role harder to evaluate for carers, for part-timers, and for people who cannot absorb uncertainty. Opaque terms tend to favor applicants who can afford risk. That matters for sector diversity, and for the stability of the work that keeps the lights on. A second vacancy at the same place sought a senior operations director to steward the organization through the next phase of growth. The posting spoke the managerial language. Budgeting, HR, procurement, compliance and project management. Someone to install processes and measure program objectives. Effective operations make research reproducible and reliable. Poor operations make deadlines slip and morale fall apart. What matters in such a hire is clarity on authority. An operations leader needs a defined remit and real resources. Hire without those and you either get surface improvements or an internal clash between management and research freedom. Professionalizing operations is necessary for scale, but it centralizes decision making. That centralization shapes priorities and can pivot research toward what funders prefer rather than what independent inquiry would pursue. A third post advertised for a communications associate to be the primary public contact. High-touch and digitally fluent read well on paper. Translated, that often means relationship work with journalists, bespoke briefings for partners, and round-clock handling of things that land in public. Who shapes messaging matters. Communications staff are the gatekeepers between research and public debate. A single hire can alter framing, prioritize audiences, or speed issues onto the policy agenda. Again, the practical details were missing. No salary, no location, no contract type. That pattern of vagueness is a proxy for priorities. It is easier to ask for a generalist who can do everything than to fund a small team with clear roles. The result can be attractive output without the sustained labor required to build trust. In effect, organizations hire packaging before they invest in the slow work of translation. Putting these adverts together gives you a useful snapshot. The sector is professionalizing. Funders reward neat deliverables and events. That incentivizes hiring people whose job it is to deliver polished packets. The trade-off is obvious: timeliness and polish at the cost of longer-term inquiry and frequently undervalued labor. If you are thinking of applying, ask about pay, contract duration, overtime expectations, and authorship credit. Impact in job listings often means grinding through logistics rather than instant policy authorship. For some temperaments, that is precisely the right job. For others, it is a career dead end. Not all useful things are people on payroll. There is a tidy calendar of free machine learning seminars running across the next 2 months. They are short, focused talks you can join virtually. For researchers far from conference budgets, for engineers who need to stay current without travel, these sessions lower the barrier to entry. They offer a chance to sample work in progress and to spot potential collaborators. But free does not mean frictionless. Time zones bite. Registration pages vary. Many events do not publish recordings. Abstracts are often thin. If you attend, do a tiny bit of preparation. Skim a presenter's recent papers, so you know whether the talk suits your needs. Treat these seminars as a gateway to deeper engagement, not a substitute for reading, experimenting, or working alongside those ideas. The week also included a quiet report that evaluated how companies document what happens after their systems leave the lab. The focus was on post-deployment artifacts, impact statements, incident logs, redaction policies, and audit trails. Those are the traces you point at when a system misbehaves or leaks sensitive information. They are the difference between a reassuring claim and something verifiable. Why that paperwork matters is practical. Governments buy systems. Companies embed them in critical services. When a vendor promises monitoring or regular evaluation, procurement officers need concrete evidence to rely on. Victims need logs to trace responsibility. Auditors need standardized formats. Without those artifacts, you have assurances rather than accountability. Yet transparency exercises can be shallow. One firm's incident log might be a time-stamped record. Another's might be a glossy summary for investors. There is a trade-off between revealing operational detail and protecting security or intellectual property. That is why templates, measurable metrics, and independent audits are essential. A polished report becomes a paper window if it hides the plumbing behind fancy language. I spoke to a doctoral researcher this week who works on explanations that make systems intelligible and trustworthy. Her point was plain: transparency is not one thing and trust is slipperier still. Explanations range from saliency views to example-based comparisons or simpler, interpretable models that deliberately sacrifice some performance for clarity. Trust can be a feeling or a measurable property like robustness, calibration, or fairness across groups. The engineering challenge is how to measure whether an explanation actually helps people. Many academic papers use proxy tasks and neat datasets. Real deployments present messy constraints, privacy rules, latency budgets, legal obligations, and existing audit logs. An explanation that looks sensible on clean test inputs can mislead under distribution shift. Explanations are not only management aids, they can be attack surfaces too. If you want transparency that matters, you need more than a lab prototype. You need repeated user studies, integration with operational monitoring, and validation under the conditions where the system will run. That is slow and expensive work. It is also boring. Which is precisely why it earns trust when it is done well. Another practical shift is physical artificial intelligence moving from demonstration to day-to-day reality. Software that controls things that move, lift, cut or steer changes the question from can it do the task? To how do you stop it when it stops being safe? Simulations and lab trials help, but they rarely capture dirt, wear, rain or a gust of wind. Updates can alter behavior overnight. So testing, monitoring and interrupt mechanisms become operational essentials. The concerns are not theoretical. Who is authorized to interrupt a running system when it behaves oddly? How do you detect slow sensor drift when telemetry is sparse? What happens when a freshly updated control stack interacts with legacy hardware? Factory-grade interlocks assume homogeneous environments and clear responsibility chains. Those assumptions dissolve with fleets of delivery bots, connected appliances and remotely updated vehicles. The conversations between hardware suppliers and chipmakers this week crystallized that point. They talked less about a mythical intelligence and more about sensors, latency, edge compute and simulation fidelity. Choices about which computations run locally versus remotely determine latency, privacy and where responsibility sits. When a handful of suppliers provide both the hardware and the control software, customers trade flexibility for convenience. That arrangement concentrates power and shapes competition. A useful technical trend ties into this, researchers using egocentric datasets to teach perception and behavior. First-person recordings from headcams and wrist sensors are practical for training systems that must operate in human environments. They show occlusions, awkward camera angles and everyday clutter. Annotated streams link sight to behavior, which is valuable for perception tasks. But such datasets do not magically close the gap between seeing and doing. Human hands compensate with tactile sensitivity and wrist flexibility that many robots lack. Collecting, labeling and governing these datasets is costly. Privacy becomes a real constraint when recordings capture homes, workplaces or bystanders. The labs that assemble the best collections gain a competitive edge, and that advantage tends to accumulate in well-funded centers. If you want an example of how modest engineering choices make a difference, look at the teams that treat resilience as a product feature. One group made 4 infrastructure decisions before a single user arrived. They fixed deployment architecture, built realistic load testing, instrumented monitoring, and defined rollback and failover plans. Those choices kept services stable for hundreds of thousands of users in finance and health. The lesson is boring but decisive. Make architecture, testing, monitoring and operational constraints first-class concerns and you reduce outages and costly remediations. Focus on model metrics and demos without the plumbing and you end up with more churn, more technical debt, and more angry customers. The right incentives are not novelty, they are uptime, explainability and measurable compliance. Regulators are noticing. Australia's Prudential Authority recently criticized several financial firms for patchy governance around autonomous decision systems. Banks and trustees are using software that can adjust risk settings or recommend investments without direct human approval. Supervisors want clear policies, accountable owners, testing, logging and incident response plans. Those are the standards that allow auditors to sign off. Financial services are a helpful canary. The firms handle sensitive data and make concrete decisions that affect livelihoods. Automated errors are expensive to unwind. Regulators are shifting from curiosity to scrutiny, and firms that treat governance as an afterthought will face fines, restrictions, or forced rollbacks. Governance is not an abstract exercise for boards. It is a practical necessity for trust in markets. We also saw another front where systems are becoming actors, not just advisors. An assistant being trialed by a major firm is designed to take actions on a user's behalf. That is a distinction with consequences. Acting means having the permissions to open calendars, send messages, book meetings, move files or interact with third-party services. Those capabilities require granular permissioning, audit trails and straightforward ways to revoke access. If an assistant can transfer money, accept legal terms or approve documents, you are in territory with clear legal and financial implications. When mistakes happen, mistakenly accepted agreements, wrong transfers or embarrassing emails, who carries the cost? Workplace policies will need to evolve. IT departments will have to manage what automated helpers are allowed to do on corporate accounts. Managers might even require usage to hit productivity targets, which shifts personal choice into enforced practice. Publicly available collections of agent code this week offered another practical snapshot. Engineers can clone code that wires a planner, tool adapters, and a memory mechanism. Those projects are excellent learning kits. They let people see the wiring rather than reconstructing it from speculation. For early-stage teams, that accelerates prototyping. Prototypes remain prototypes. Many demos assume pristine inputs, rely on brittle third-party APIs, and hide scarce datasets. Licensing is often unclear. If you run these projects, expect to invest in hardening, audit, governance, and testing. An acting system that calls arbitrary services is as much a risk management problem as it is a software challenge. A related point arrived in developer workflows. Teams adopting automated coding assistants see more commits and pull requests. The noise increases. Output looks higher. What that noise often fails to? Well, that was another rather full-on week in the world of artificial intelligence. With so much noise, it's always worth taking a moment to sift through it all, isn't it? If you'd like a daily digest of what's actually happening, without the usual fanfare, you can find that at jonathanharris.online. Just one email, no unnecessary embellishments. And this week, I'm pleased to mention my own small contribution to the discussion, the book Artificial Intelligence in Construction, Building a Sustainable Future. You'll find that in the ebooks section. That's your lot for this week's Turing's Torch. If you want the daily brief, head to jonathanharris.online. Same time next week, try not to believe the press releases.